It's all about the money, from the markets to your pocketbook. Welcome to The Upswing, presented by Oricon Bank, the natural choice for all your banking needs. Now for the host that's always on The Upswing, Jeff Sherman.
Now, to business, gentlemen.
Good morning, Wisconsin. Good morning, Milwaukee. Let's go. The Upswing. Three big things to start the show right off the bat. Federal Reserve and your money. Dave Spano, president and CEO of Annex Wealth Management, will join us. We're going to look at a bunch of different things. The big question really is, going into the Federal Reserve's meeting today, kind of comes down to how strongly officials signal their desire to cut rates. What could a rate cut mean for consumers? What could it mean for our pocketbook? And frankly, who's benefiting from these high interest rates right now? Dave will give us insight on that. Then we're going to look at some return to office policies and the economics of co-working. Kohl's is bringing its employees back to the office this fall. And did you know that you can rent out a house in Cudahy for $195 for a half a day for your business? And also, if you have a home in the Milwaukee area, you could Airbnb it to businesses and make a little money on the side. The national expert on co-working and one of the founders of a company called Radius, Amina Moreau, will join us later in the show. And then I'm going to talk about coffee a little bit because coffee's on my mind, money's on my mind. What's the daily coffee cost? Starbucks was out with some earnings and some impacts on their sales yesterday. We'll discuss that later in the show. But right now, Dave Spano, president and CEO of Annex Wealth Management, joins us. Dave, happy Wednesday.
Wow, what an agenda you got. What a great show it's going to be. Yes, sir. Thanks for having me on.
Indeed. All right. So, kind of first, given the current environment, who benefits the most from high interest rates?
Well, you know, for years, Jeff, you know, if you were a saver, you'd walk into your local bank or your credit union, you look up at the wall, and the savings rate began with a decimal point. It didn't have a whole number in front of it. So first and foremost, savers certainly are doing better because, you know, for so long, you know, Mrs. Kuskovevitz in that house in Cudahy, she'd go to her branch, and she wasn't getting paid. So she was taking undue risk. She was starting to buy some equities just because she was trying to look for some dividends. Mm-hmm. But now, because rates are higher and she can get a CD rate or even a savings rate, some north of 5%, they have been, and those savers have been, beneficiaries of this.
Okay. All right. So where do officials set the bar? Possibly today will be discussed for a September interest rate cut.
Yep. Yeah, for sure. You know, we're going to have a meeting here in just almost exactly 3 hours from now. And it's signaling that we will not get that rate cut today. But the betting odds are that it was almost 100% that we'll see it in September. But between now and then, the Fed is going to get two signals of where inflation is. And that's been their big battle. As you well know, inflation went through the roof over the last 4 years. Cumulative inflation has been somewhere between 20 and 25%, and wages haven't kept up. So the Fed tried to slow that down by raising interest rate. That, in effect, slows down inflation. It sure looks like that's happening. Inflation readings have been between 2 and 3%, which is near their target. Mm-hmm. And so we'll see something probably in February. In September. That is really almost 100%. But I've seen this before, Jeff. I've seen high betting odds, and it didn't happen. So don't take it to the bank even with those betting odds.
And then the Fed meets again in November and December also. So, I mean, we could see additional cuts for the rest of the year.
And those are what are called live meetings. And by the way, that meeting is November 7th, I believe, which is after the election. And so that could be even more news breaking. You know, we'll see. We may not even know who wins the election on November 5th or 6th, right? But we'll see. But November 7th will be another meeting. That's likely to be another live meeting. And by the way, Jeff, we're talking about quarter point reductions. And so when we went from 0 to 5.5%, it's going to take a long time to get back to where we were.
All right. I want to get your thoughts on Elon Musk's involvement in the Trump campaign and what implications it could have on the race, and also the impact of the latest Tesla recall on sales. This is The Upswing, presented by Horicon Bank. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. We are joined by Dave Spano, President and CEO of Annex Wealth Management. So, Dave, where do you see consumer confidence today? And what's kind of the best gauge of consumer confidence out there?
Yeah, you know, it really is was a great article in the Wall Street Journal today and talks about the economic data points is really a picture of two Americas. And it's worth reading. But there are consumer confidence levels that are very high on the upper income stratas and very low, you know, below the Mendoza line, wherever you want to pick that, you know, the bottom 40-50% of Americans. And that is because the upper echelon income earners, they have assets, and those assets have done well in as the markets have gone up. They've, you know, certainly benefited from higher interest rates, and they weren't hurt by those interest rates for higher borrowing costs, higher mortgage costs. But if you take that whatever that line is, the upper cohorts are doing well, but the lower ones hurt by inflation, hurt by higher interest rates. And if that kind of, you know, that continues to go on, you're going to continue to see this bifurcation of America, where there will be upper income folks that are earning and doing well and spending at restaurants and cruise lines, and lower income people who are just really getting hammered by high inflation and high interest rates. So the consumer confidence is really it's low, and it's you have to think about how it's coming along and where people are spending their money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a lot of the analysis yesterday after the Starbucks sales numbers came out, that yeah, the core customer who is there every day, they're not hurt, but Starbucks doesn't have that budget price point, and the perception is it's a high-end product, and they're kind of losing that customer base. So do they retool a little bit and go for, you know, a bargain coffee cup?
That's
a business decision.
Right. It's an economic term, and people do substitute all the time. So maybe they substitute, who knows, for, you know, a gas station coffee versus a Starbucks coffee, but people are making substitutions all the time right now. So this Consumer Confidence Board measure that usually the University of Michigan has is getting better, but it's really weird. People are not feeling better.
Yeah. Okay. What about the labor market? What clues could Friday's key government reports deliver?
Well, you know, we have to watch that because we were in this great job economy for, you know, post COVID, and that is beginning to slow down. Now, we had a good jobs report, you know, the last report showing 260,000 jobs that were created, but they are slowing down. The number of applications are slowing down. The unemployment rate is going up. So that is this, you know, the Federal Reserve has this what's called the dual mandate, two jobs. One is to control inflation. The second is to have full economy. And so they're in a tough spot. And this is really goes back to what I think was their mistake back in, you know, years ago when they kept interest rates too low for too long, what was called ZERP, zero interest rate policy. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they're in a predicament. So they're going to take these rates down very, very slowly.
Okay. All right. And then I said I wanted to talk a little bit about Elon Musk and Trump. We got to do that. This dynamic is really interesting to me. You have Elon, you think EVs, you think electric vehicles, and people's minds go to Elon Musk. But on the campaign trail, you have Trump saying he's going to end the EV mandates.
Right.
And then you have Tesla recalling, almost 2 million vehicles due to some hood issues.
Right.
You know, what impact does this all have for the consumer on the auto market?
Yeah, and it's really a great question. Let's talk about really what he said. So he was a little ticked off at my favorite newspaper called the Wall Street Journal, because he said he did not say he was going to give $45 million a month to Trump. He said he's going to give $45 million to this Make America Great in the first place. That's the name of his pack.
Okay.
And so that's where that money is going. So he's going to support ideas that do that, even though it's against the EV mandate. And by the way, he announced that just days after, maybe 2 days after the Trump assassination attempt. So this was really an interesting idea. But he is, you know, he's moving out of California because of high taxation and regulation and some of the ideas that he believes the liberals promote. And so it's really, he is making a political statement. There's no question about that. But as you said, 1.8 million of these EV cars, these Teslas, were being recalled because, you know, you're driving along and then the hood pops open. You know, you've got peekaboo underneath the hood to try to get along. But they can over the air fix that. And that's what they're going to do, is they're going to send something to all the owners of the Tesla EVs that have this have been affected by this.
Yeah, you know, a quick software update will correct that for sure. But you don't want the cars on the road with the hoods flying up. You know, that's not a good thing. That's right.
No, that's a bad look.
Okay, well, Dave, I appreciate your time this morning. Enjoy the rest of the day and the rest of the week, and we'll talk again soon.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff. See ya.
Okay, bye-bye. All right, when we come back, we will talk about the economics of co-working and return to work. I wanted to kind of take a local lens on this. There's a company called Radius that essentially, if you have a home in the greater Milwaukee area or anywhere in Wisconsin, you want to make some extra money? Well, you think, all right, I should Airbnb that home. Sure, but what about leasing it to businesses who in turn will pay you to take their staff for a remote work opportunity? Really interesting model. Amina Maru will join us after the break and much, much more. This is The Upswing. We are presented by Horicon Bank. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. Talking co-working, return to office, and the economic implications of it all. Any mandated policy kind of raises questions for employees and operational strategy, that's for sure. Last week, Kohl's, one of the largest employers in the area, about 100,000 people, decided to call corporate employees back to the office by fall of this year, curbing its previous remote work flexibility for certain roles, basically employees within 30 miles. So this marks a significant shift in the company's approach to work arrangements, aligning with some kind of broader trends, right, among corporations that are reevaluating some of their return to office strategies. I got a few comments from Kohl's I wanted to read to just tee up this topic, if you will. Kohl's says, it prides itself on being a great place to work, striving to promote a welcoming, supportive, and inclusive environment for our associates. We've been intentional in creating a workspace for our associates that they can love. Our building features food service from Bartolotta, a full wellness center, and great care services from pharmacies and fitness centers, OnCare daycare, and much, much more. I wanted to get an expert opinion on return to office and kind of take a wider range view into the future of the economics and flexibility of work. So joining us today via the Tri-County Contracting Hotline is Amina Maru, the CEO and co-founder of Radius. I'll have her explain the full backstory on Radius because it's a really interesting Airbnb-type model for work. But first, Amina, welcome and thanks for taking the time out of your day.
Jeff, who would have thought that 4 years later they would still be such a hot topic? Incredible.
It's amazing, isn't it? Well, what are your thoughts from kind of, you're in Seattle now or Portland?
In Portland today.
Okay, all right. So what are some of the key benefits and challenges that you see with kind of a decentralized work model? And also, let's just talk about, obviously, CEOs are making these economic decisions each and every day. The trend of remote work, how is it evolving in your eyes?
Yeah. Look, I think there are two main benefits to a more decentralized or call it remote or flexible work style. These two being companies expand their talent pool radius to the entire globe versus just the immediate commute radius of the office. So that's number one. Mm-hmm. And then number two is employee freedom. Countless studies have shown that when people have freedom in their work lives, they're more motivated, they're more productive, and they're more innovative. So you have two great benefits. Of course, you still have challenges. And the biggest one is that it's a different leadership model. You can't just take a carbon copy of what you did pre-pandemic in the office and apply it to remote and flexible work and expect it to work flawlessly. There's some upskilling, and not every leader is willing to put that effort in.
Yeah. So how do companies like Kohl's that are saying, hey, it's time to come back to work, we want 4 days in the office, we want that connection, we want that collaboration, how do you find the balance then between maintaining control over operations and then providing employees with that sense of autonomy that, you know, frankly, we all want and need?
Yeah, it's very true. And I have been adamant that the office is, or I should say the traditional office, is not the only place where you can build culture and foster productivity. There are countless ways to work on this planet. And working from home also is only just one facet of remote work. I think that's something that we have to remember, that during the pandemic, working from home was the only way to work remotely. But now that we're in a new era, there are countless ways. And not all of them need to be as isolating as a work from home situation. And so I think that companies like Kohl's that do have a really strong culture would be wise to really think more closely about that intentionality of those gatherings, but more critically, thinking about proximity too, because a lot of people live a decent commute time away from that office. And so bringing that togetherness closer to home in really cool, memorable environments, and really importantly, giving people a strong reason to be there.
Yeah. So I want to get to your model at Radius and how it's addressing the gap between what companies want and what employees need. Welcome back to The Upswing, presented by Horicon Bank. Talking with Amina Moreau, who is the CEO and co-founder at Radius. While the return to office policies that we're all seeing around the country, they foster collaboration and strengthen company culture without a doubt, but they pose some challenges related to employee satisfaction and talent retention. And that's where the Radius model kind of helps to maybe address the gap between what companies want and what employees need in terms of workspace flexibility. Amina, tell us what Radius is striving to do across the country. And you're live here in Milwaukee as well, right?
We are. In fact, Milwaukee was the very first city that we expanded into after we started first in Portland, Oregon. Really proud and excited to be in that market.
Then I am looking at the Radius app right now and seeing a variety of different housing opportunities. So talk to us about the model and how it works.
Right. So basically what Radius does is we take homes and other suburban properties and we rent them out as meeting and workspaces, mostly to companies either without offices or those who have downsized their office space but perhaps can't fit all of their people, or are generally prioritizing offsites or team retreats to keep that creativity flowing. So it's a really flexible way to get people together again without all the baggage of a centralized office with high costs.
So it's kind of that third space, if you will. If you're an entrepreneur or if you're a solopreneur, if you have a small team, you can use it as your workspace. But if you have a large team at a company that just wants a good offsite and doesn't want to spend $2,000 at the conference center, you can rent from Radius.
That's exactly right. And you can rent by the day. And so for those companies who really only need to get together with their teammates once a month, once a week, it really doesn't make sense to pay for an office space 7 days a week if you're only using it once or twice. And through our model, you can either book by the day or engage in more flexible terms. You save a lot of money.
And what are you seeing in your markets then? If I'm a homeowner and my house is empty during the day, how does that model look for me if I want to make some money on the side?
Right. And this is a great housing affordability issue, right? We're struggling across the whole country, right? Not just in Milwaukee. And this is a great way for homeowners to rent out, for example, their dining room or their living room to small teams that need to get together. For example, could be a creative agency that needs to work together with their team to create concepts for a client. You have a great dining room, add a whiteboard, all of a sudden it is a meeting or brainstorm space with the snap of a finger, and homeowners can now monetize their space on a per day basis and not worry about the headache that comes with overnight hosting with other platforms.
All right. I want to dive into some of the costs and just what it's going to cost on a half day basis, on a full day basis, and then what you're seeing from some of the clients in terms of, hey, I have a house available. How much money can I make with this opportunity? Amina Moreau is the CEO and co-founder of Radius. You're listening to The Upswing. Here we are on WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing. We're presented by the good people at Horicon Bank. The economic and environmental benefits around co-working. So, Amina, what differences are you seeing in markets that you're in? I mean, here in Milwaukee, we're having some good debate around the economics and the neighborhood policies with Airbnbs. Like, hey, Airbnb, there's some challenges. There's a lot of opportunity for sure, but certain areas just do not allow for single day rentals. Many of the municipalities, want to put multi day terms into contracts. So, what are you seeing in terms of market difference in the co-working model that you have at Radius?
There are a lot of similarities between our day model for work as with Airbnb's night model for sleeping and accommodations, but there are also some really important differences. And Airbnb gets a lot of flack from neighborhoods for things like parties, noise, property damage, and even parking issues. The biggest one I think they get a hard time for is stealing away housing inventory, which is clearly a huge issue across the country.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that we're really excited about for our model is because it's day only and it's for the purpose of work, the renters tend to be a lot more responsible. They're not there for leisure. They're there to sit behind a laptop or write creatively on a whiteboard together with their team. And so the chance of noise and parties and destruction is much lower. Parking issues are reduced. And like we were talking about a few minutes ago, we're actually helping with housing affordability in ways that platforms like Airbnb just can't because it's day only. And so certainly we're keeping an eye on these trends and municipalities kind of cracking down. But with the Radius model, we're taking cars off roads because people are staying closer to home for their work days. It's leveling the playing field and giving people better access to their teams without the commute. So it's really a great thing.
So what has the feedback been on costs? I'm seeing a place here on Fifth Street, a Fifth Street retreat, great for groups, $200 for half day. How do you kind of get the feedback on the cost structure for your model?
Right. And we actually just launched half days on Monday. And so that is a very new feature that we're testing. Prior to Monday, the smallest increment of time that you could book for was a full day. And the reason we launched with that is because what we were finding was teams really wanted to be together for that full day. Even if they only had a meeting in the morning for an hour or two, they still wanted to stay together and co-work for the rest of the afternoon. But variety is the spice of life, and that is that new work era that we're in. And so as far as costs go, the average space for about 5 or 10 people is about $350 for the day. Now, there's a huge range there, right?
Mm-hmm.
It depends on the size of the space and the amenities. But despite headlines, Jeff, more companies are adopting flex work. So the market for flex spaces is only growing. So it's a great opportunity for homeowners to make a little side income.
Yeah, we did predictions at the end of the show yesterday here on the Upswing, and that was one of my predictions, is that we're going to see more and more national companies come into markets like Milwaukee because the need is greater for that third space. No matter if you're working in the office or at home, people want that flexibility and that hybrid work style. And it's coming to markets our size for sure. What about from the homeowner perspective? How do I list my home? And then what's the opportunity for me financially? What's that percentage look like?
Simply go to radius.pro and sign up to be a host. We have plenty of resources on what makes for great work hospitality. And it's as simple as spending 10 or 15 minutes to create a listing, similar to what you would do if you were hosting on Airbnb. We just ask you different questions. Mm-hmm. We ask about desks and Wi-Fi speeds and whether you have a whiteboard, things like that. But it's really easy to get started. Our hosts can choose what they want to make per day, and they also choose their time. And so if they want to rent out their space 9 to 5, those are the hours that they enter. If you only want to do 10 to 4, it's completely up to you.
All right. A model for homeowners and business owners and entrepreneurs. Radius, Amina Moreau, thank you for joining us this morning. I appreciate your time.
A pleasure, Jeff.
All right. Morning coffee. Where'd you get your coffee this morning? I have thoughts. We need a coffee index in this market, and I might just be the person to create it. This is The Upswing, presented by Horicon Bank. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. We're presented by Horicon Bank. So briefly, there are new renderings out for I-794 to be replaced with a boulevard. Do some searching on social media. You'll find them for sure. I want you to stay open to the fact that there's big business opportunity to take down 794 and replace it with a boulevard that gives us more opportunities to create collisions and connections all around greater downtown. Spent about 2 hours in a meeting yesterday looking at different placemaking initiatives, kind of anchored right here in the heart of downtown Westtown, where Good Karma Brands is, and looking for ways to create more sustainable, healthy passageways to all areas around downtown. One opportunity is to bring 794 down to boulevard grade to create more chances for retail and connections and business growth. Keep your mind open about that opportunity. It's a long process ahead of us, but I want us all to be mindful of what's ahead. So where is your morning coffee from? WTMJ Talk and Text Line 855-616-1620. I'm a equal opportunity coffee drinker, and I love the options that we have here in Greater Milwaukee. I've said it often, Brew City is now about brewing beer and coffee, a lot of great local options, Colativo, Stone Creek, Valentine, Anodyne, Fiddleheads, Pilcrow, so many great national brands too, right? And you know what they all are. But the gas station coffee is still a really good option too. You pop into a quick trip, you get your really good local brew. I like the experience of going to a coffee place, to seeing people, and even to hanging out there and doing some work. But places like Starbucks are really moving away from that model. It's all drive-through now. Many of the locations, I see the location just off of Marquette's campus here in downtown, no seating. And sometimes mobile orders only. The Starbucks model has radically changed since its start way back when it was a sit-down, kind of that third space that you go to and hang out all day. Now, mobile apps and drive-through orders make up more than 70% of Starbucks sales at its approximately 9,500 company-operated stores in the United States. Cold coffee, I got to admit, I'm still, here's my order, just so you know it. I'm a half regular, half decaf. That's what I do, but I know that's not the average anymore. It's cold coffees, it's teas, it's lemonades. That is making up a way bigger, higher percentage than hot coffee today. But this from CNN yesterday, Starbucks sales dropped 3% globally as over stores from last year, including a 2% drop in its home North American market. Now, it's kind of a masked how steep that decline was for Starbucks last quarter. Total transactions at North American stores opened at least a year fell by 6% in the quarter. And that was in part offset by higher prices. In other words, fewer people are going to Starbucks and buying drinks and food. It was Starbucks' second straight quarter of sales declines. All right. I paid, and like I said earlier, I'm going to do my best to create a coffee index, maybe a couple times a week, where I showcase, hey, here's what I paid for my cup of coffee coming in, so you can look at your pocketbook and say, all right, wow, is that worth it? Maybe it is. Maybe it isn't. For me, the experience is always worth it. I paid $3.18 today for my 16-ounce half-regular, half-decaf coffee at a local place. I had a little splash of cream. That's my order. I'm not going to lie. I don't like paying more than $3 a cup for my coffee, but it makes me happy, and I'm more than willing to do it. We're going to keep an eye on coffee prices as we move along here on The Upswing. We're presented by Horicon Bank.